Good morning and welcome to another episode of Community Matters. My name is James Gage and I am honored to be here with Beth Broadway, who's the president and CEO at Interfaith Works of CNY. Hello, Beth. How are you?
Hello, James, and happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter to you as well. I'm glad you mentioned that. Today is a big holiday. It's celebrated by almost all Christian churches the world over, so we want to wish everybody a happy Easter today who's celebrating. And, well, because today is a religious holiday, we wanted to talk with somebody who was involved in religious dialogue, and we're so glad that you accepted the invitation to come and to be our guest with us this morning.
Well, thanks so much for asking us. Can't wait to tell you all about it.
Well, let's start with that then. Tell us a little bit about Interfaith Works. How did it come about?
Interfaith Works is a local nonprofit organization here in Central New York. It serves the seven counties within the Central New York region. And we were founded by faith leaders of a lot of different faiths, Christians, both Protestants and Catholics. There were Jewish leaders who were very, very instrumental in founding Interfaith Works. And at that time, in the early 70s and late 60s, these faith leaders were working on issues of civil rights. And when the civil rights law was passed in 1965, they continued their work together on from there. And so the agency was really founded to build interfaith understanding among the different faith traditions, as well as to continue the work of ending racism and creating racial equity for our communities. So we've been around. We were actually formally incorporated in 1976. So this is our 43rd year of operation.
Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like Interfaith Works itself is sort of a homegrown organization, but are there organizations like yours nationwide, or is
this
sort of unique?
There are organizations like ours, but we are not part of any kind of like a Red Cross or a YMCA, which has a national organization and then local chapters. What happens is these grassroots movements spring up in cities all across the nation and the world. But we are part of several networks of groups that are involved in interfaith understanding. And I think the thing that's really interesting is that since 1976 until today, the kinds of ways that people worship God have changed so much in terms of who's living in our
right.
communities because of immigration, because of the refugee crisis, because people have migrated. So we are now an organization that not only is about Christianity and Judaism, but also the other Abrahamic branch, Muslims. We have people who are from Eastern religions like Zen Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism that are part of our organization, people who are part of many, many different traditions like the Sikh tradition or Hindu traditions from the Middle East. It's a great organization where lots of different kinds of people can come together, and also people who are not religious but want to do service work or work that is of benefit to humankind. So it's a big organization with lots of different people working.
Sure, with a large umbrella.
Yes.
So since it's interesting, you had mentioned people who are not religious who want
mm-hmm.
to get involved. Since
yeah.
the focus of your organization isn't just on the civil rights movement anymore, and it's expanded since that's happened, there's opportunities for people who want to interact in that dialogue about ending racism and to get involved in that way.
Yes, that's absolutely true. We have four major program service areas, and the dialogue work is one of those, and maybe we can talk a little deeper about that. We also work with senior citizens. We have a very large program and a growing program in our Center for Senior Services because we noticed that as our tagline and part of our mission is to affirm the dignity of every person and every faith tradition, that many of our elders in our community are very lonely, and that loneliness and isolation leads to depression. It does not leave them living their lives out in a dignified way. So we have three programs that serve elders that are not religiously based, but they're based in their homes or in a nursing home where maybe they don't have anybody visiting them anymore.
Sure.
And we also do a lot of work with elder refugees. So that's a big area of our service. Another area of our service is our refugee resettlement and then refugee and immigrant services. So we've been settling refugees for more than 35 years. And we also, our fourth area is our interfaith understanding. So it's dialogue, interfaith understanding, senior citizens, and refugees and immigrants.
So let's talk a little bit about those refugee families that you helped to settle. from what I gather, you have what's called the Center for New Americans.
We do.
Which is a wonderful name, by the way.
Thank you.
Whoever came up with that did a great job. That's perfect. How many refugees does Interfaith Works help to settle annually?
Right now, we're settling this year about 240 refugees. That's a low number because of the executive orders that have come out over the last 2 years, limiting where people can come from and setting a very low cap on the numbers of refugees that will come to the U.S. this year. That's a significantly smaller number than we have the capacity to serve, which is unfortunate. At the same time, there's a growing number of people who are refugees as a result of war and political repression and atrocities around the planet. So so we have settled up to 800 refugees in a given year.
Wow, no kidding.
Yes.
And that's in the recent past.
Yes, we did that in 2016. In 2015, we settled 650 refugees. So last year, we settled 108. This year, we are going to do more than double that, and hopefully next year, it'll be even more.
Is that just... I mean, you work primarily here in Central New York, and we're talking about 800 refugees that are coming to our area. Is Central New York a place that a lot of refugees seek out, or is that where they're all over the nation and these are just the few that are coming up here?
Yeah, it's both, actually. Some people do seek out to live here because one of the things that Interfaith Works is known for is reunifying families who have gotten separated. So maybe a husband and wife or a mother with her children has come at a previous time, and now we have found the parents or an aunt and uncle of them in a refugee camp, and they are ready to come and unify with their family. So they're going to want to come where their family already is. But we're one of about 400 refugee resettlement cities across the United States, and they're everywhere. You know, refugees are in the middle of everywhere now across the United States. It's been a huge humanitarian effort of this nation to help people who have had to leave their homelands because of mostly civil war, but also because of ethnic cleansing or genocides of governments who no longer want a certain kind of people in their country. And so we have been a country that has always, since the refugee program was started in the early 70s, settled refugees and been part of the world community who has said people deserve to have another chance at life. You can't live well in a refugee camp. You can just survive.
Sure.
So we help people get their lives started. And for the most part, the refugees that come really just want to give their children a chance to get a life, have jobs, and raise their families just like any other American.
And what's that process like in helping them to settle? What are the kinds of programs that you offer them?
Well, we do all of the early reception and placement of them so that we get notified by the U.S. State Department through our national affiliation with the Episcopal Migration Ministries. And they tell us, will you accept this refugee? And we have this whole certification process because they've all been certified and tested through the United States State Department first. So we pick them up at the airport and have an apartment or a home ready for them. And many of our faith partners help us with that. They do food and clothing drives. They do furniture drives and help us get household goods. So we set up the apartments. And then in those first 3 months, we do an intensive amount of work with them. We get them their social security cards. We do an assessment of their skills, their language skills, their job skills. We help them find a job. We want them to become as self-sufficient as possible, as quickly as possible. If they don't have good English skills, we can either give them some tutoring while they're waiting to get into an adult education program or immediately help them get adult education. We register their kids for school.
Wow.
We help them get their medical tests done if they have a medical condition or maybe they were injured in the war and they need a doctor. We get them connected to a primary care doctor, all of those kind of basic things that people need. We do cultural orientation. We teach them about home safety. Many refugees have never lived in a city, and so now here they are placed in a city. They need to learn about locking their doors. Eventually, they'll learn to drive a car, so we do some driver safety. Eventually, they're going to be able to become citizens of the United States, so we offer training courses for them to become citizens. And then if they lose a job or they're ready for a next job, they can come back to us, and we have employment counselors that help them do that. We also have a lot of refugees who are sent to this part of Central New York because we have great medical services here with our hospitals. So we do often get refugees who may have a heart condition or some kind of longer-term medical care. So we do have intensive case managers on our staff who are masters of social work, and they can walk them through the whole medical process. I mean, imagine you don't speak the language. You've
right.
never had medical care like this. You don't know how to navigate these systems.
I mean,
so.
I'm an American, and I hardly understand how to navigate the
exactly.
medical system. So, I mean, you said that you're equipped to help 800 or more at a time if given the opportunity. Is this a network of volunteers that are helping?
It's staff and volunteers. We could not do what we do if we did not have our volunteer corps, which is massive. We have probably 30 people in our office volunteering any given week just on our refugee program. And then we also have a small staff that also helps to do this. So we seek out grants. Community foundations in town have been very generous to us in helping us to work with refugees. We've sought out a lot of national grants. And so we'd have staff as well as volunteers doing this work.
Now, I would imagine that a lot of these people are coming from places that are very different than Central New York. How
yes.
do they find settling here? Is it an easy process? Or
I think the first year is tough. You know, imagine yourself lifted up out of the country of your origin, you know, the mountains you knew, the farm you grew up on, anything like that. And boom, you've just, you know, the government maybe showed up at your door and said, you're the wrong kind of people, get out. And so you had to travel with just a suitcase and a wheelbarrow, maybe. You weren't even allowed to bring your animals or your vehicles or anything. Traveling across the border into another country, trying to find safety because you're no longer welcome in your own country, or a civil war has swept through your village and you're not safe, so you've had to flee through that. And here you are. You have your children in tow, maybe your elderly mother. I mean, just imagine what that must be like
sure.
for people. And you find a place that the United Nations has set aside and has worked with your neighboring country, and they've set up a refugee camp. And it's usually small tents or huts that have been built. They bring in water. They bring in food every day. And you live there. Some people, like the Bhutanese people that we've settled in the recent past, often lived in those refugee camps for 18 to 20 years. So when they brought young children with them, those children never even knew their real country.
Right.
They only knew the refugee camp life. So you come here, and now you are kind of thrust into the cold winters of Syracuse, but also the beautiful summers of Syracuse. And it can be a very, very depressing and frightening experience. You don't know city life. Maybe you don't understand how American racism works. If you're a dark-skinned person, now you're subject to that kind of racism. Maybe you are a person who had a particular kind of a job, but your credentials don't translate to the U.S. So here you are having to start your whole life over. And I think many people sort of operate on top of a lot of grief, a lot of loss, a lot of pain, and then come to a place of, well, I've just got to kind of suck it up and make it happen and make my life start over again. And I'm continually amazed and humbled by people's resilience and their ability to start over.
Wow. That really does speak to the human spirit, doesn't it?
It does indeed.
Yeah.
It's like a resurrection.
It is, isn't it? Well
Back
said.
To our Easter theme.
So let's talk a little bit about the dialogue that you have. Interfaith Works, it's in your name. There's an interfaith organization that helps members of different faith traditions come together and talk. What kinds of faith traditions are represented through Interfaith Works?
So we have a lot of things. We have a roundtable of faith leaders, and that's our soul. That part of our organization is our soul. And there's a person sitting at that table from each of the major Christian traditions. In other words, there's a Methodist, there's a Presbyterian, there's an Episcopalian, there's a Catholic priest, etc. And then we also have the head of the Zen Center, which is and also the head of the Tibetan Buddhist group in town. We have a member of the Sikh Foundation, the Sikh tradition, at the table. We have several different Muslim groups that are at the table, both from the Islamic Society and from the Ahmadiyya Muslim group. We have two rabbis at the table and the Jewish Federation at the table representing the Rabbinical Council. So there are many, many different faiths that are sitting at that table together. I probably missed a bunch of them. There are about 35 different faiths that meet every month and have been meeting every month for 43 years.
Wow.
Now, and we take that for granted, but when we sort of step back from it and realize, wait a minute, this doesn't happen everywhere. It's a pretty extraordinary group of people.
That's true.
So when something happens, like this last couple of months, we've seen these terrible incidences of, in Louisiana, the burning of Black Christian churches, or the Tree of Life shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, or the killings in the mosques in New Zealand. Our community can quickly and comfortably come together, pray together, be together, grieve together, and stand for no more of this. Without much of a beat. They can just, because they already know each other, they already respect each other, they already understand that the stereotypes about each other are not the truth about each other. They understand that we're all people of God or people of the One, and that we are all working to end suffering and to bring compassion to the world.
I think most people grow up with the notion that the only way to keep friends is to avoid talking politics and talking religion. And it sounds like you're proving that wrong by having folks come together with different faith traditions and talking and comforting each other, especially at those extremely difficult times.
Yeah, we do talk politics and we do talk religion, because politics with a small p is really about who's got the resources and who needs the resources. So if we're going to talk about providing for human needs, to live in a compassionate community, to live someplace where we affirm the dignity of all people, we have to talk about who needs things and who's where it,
right.
How are those needs going to get met? And we talk religion all the time because that's their life. You know, that's the life of all of these faith leaders. So that's one of the things that we do. But we also do community dialogues on interfaith understanding. So it's for anybody. It's for everybody. And we do them both as a one-time come to dinner at somebody's home. And we put together these groups every September. We have about 200 different people in locations all around the counties where people can come together and learn about each other. Like, what do you think heaven is? And what do you think happens after you die? And when is a time when you've questioned your faith? When is a time when you've struggled? When is a time when your faith sustained you? What do you think God really is? You know, and people have these wild and wonderful conversations that are just very deeply enriching. And those happen all the time, and people can just call our offices and sign up to be in one of those groups. It's for everybody, not just for people who are actively in some congregation someplace, or even people who are questioning, like, what's this really all about? They would be very welcome in these circles.
It's good that you mentioned that these are wonderful conversations, because I think one could imagine having a group of religious leaders having a discussion, it could easily turn into a debate about who's right and who has the ideas that are correct and who's wrong and where is their truth. But it doesn't sound like that is what happens at these dialogues.
No, and it's kind of one of the things that we ask people to agree to. We are not trying to turn people into anything. I don't want you to have to be who I am, and I'm not asking you to make me who you are. We need to understand each other. We need to have deep conversations that are often difficult and courageous conversations about our differences, not just about finding our sameness. But in order to move things forward as a community, we have to at least be able to find where we have common ground. And common ground means the place where even in our differences, we find agreement, where we can stand together and move forward from that place of common ground. And that's what we do a lot with our Ending Racism dialogues as well. And we have a lot of dialogues for kids that will help them to understand each other across these differences. We have an interfaith dialogue that just is getting started right now with 8 different congregations of and the kids from those congregations. And they're going to meet and do dialogues for 6 weeks starting next week. And then they're going to go to each other's places of worship. They're going to sit through a worship service with each other at each of these different 8 wow. places. It's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. There are 2 of our synagogues. There are 2 of our mosques. There are several other, there's a Presbyterian church. You know, all these different kids are going to be together and kind of walk this journey together for this next year, at the end of which they're going to go back and assess each of these places of worship and see what needs to be made more beautiful. Maybe there needs to be some tree planted somewhere, or maybe they want to put in some flower boxes, or maybe they want to paint the kids' room or something like that. And the kids are all going to do that work together. So
it's such a great idea. You get such an interesting viewpoint from kids, from teenagers, that you wouldn't have as an adult. You wouldn't see as an adult, maybe. And they tend to be a lot more honest, I think, than...
Yeah, they're not rigid yet. You know, they haven't kind of rigidly sort of said, my way is the right way. They're kind of open to each other. But, you know, it's funny you say that, James. What we've discovered in these interfaith dialogues is that people's own faiths get strengthened by learning about the faiths of the rest of the people on the planet, the faiths that are different than their own. And I think sometimes people are afraid, oh, if my kids get exposed to different faiths, they're going to not live out my faith. That hasn't been the case so much. You know, I mean, I do think we need to give people a chance to experience each other's faith traditions. But when I have to explain my faith to you, I have to explain it to myself at the same time. You know what I mean?
I do, yeah. That's really well said. You talked a little bit about Common Core or core ideology. Is there a central ideology or belief that you would say that all faith traditions share?
Well, the golden rule is certainly one. You can look at any tradition and you can find some iteration of the golden rule: to do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And it's really what we try to embody with our mission statement, which is to affirm the dignity of every person and every faith tradition. That it is up to us to see each person and each community, each skin color, each religion as part of the overall plan for the human race. You know, there's no bunch of different races on the planet. There's the human race. We come in all different DNA and all different colors and all different hairstyles and different kinds of eye shapes, but we're all human beings. And so that's a really great place to get started.
One of the events that you hold annually that helps to showcase the diversity and the oneness that all of us have is the duck race in Syracuse. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yes, it's one of our 2 biggest events. The Interfaith Leadership Award Dinner is the other one. I'll talk about that in a second. But the Duck Race to End Racism was started 17 years ago. We started it because we wanted to have a place to demonstrate what the world would look like when racism was ended. So it's run by people of all different skin colors who come together, different leadership, different kinds of things on a big entertainment stage out at Syracuse Inners Harbor. It's going to happen on June 8th this year. It's totally free. There's a lot of stuff for kids to do, and there are 3 duck races. We actually do race plastic ducks down Onondaga Creek out towards the lake, Onondaga Lake. And it's a lot of fun, and it's about 3,000 people who show up. We have dancing, we have entertainment, we have free ice cream all day from Burn Dairy.
There's something everyone can agree on.
Well, you know, when racism is ended, ice cream will be free. That's the way it works. So we're very excited about the day. And it's a completely open festival. And it's one of the most diverse festivals I think you'll ever see, because everybody's there.
Now, why ducks?
Don't duck racism.
Uh-huh,
we want people to really face the fact that we are privileging some of us and oppressing others of us, and that we need to face this together, that it's not okay. You know, my skin color doesn't make me better than or worse than anybody else. It just is. And so we have to face this together. So that's why we came up with that theme.
That's a great idea.
Plus, it's a lot of fun. You know, racism is a very heavy topic. It's painful to look at. It's painful to think about the results of the enslavement of Black people and the genocide of Native people, which started our country's economies. Has been devastating for us. Even now, you know, 400 or 500 years later, those wounds have not healed, and those situations of structural racism have not been fixed. And so we carry that pain, and it's a very difficult and hurtful thing to continue to be in the country and to not have these things repaired. But I think what the Duck Race allows us to do is to celebrate that we have been working on those issues and those tough and courageous conversations all year long, and now we can come together and celebrate our lives together.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because this isn't an event to deny that those things exist or that they happen.
No.
You've been talking about this all year round. You've been working toward a more unified community. And this isn't just to put a happy face on a very heavy subject. This is really to celebrate all of the work that you've been doing the year up to that point.
That's right. And all of the people that have been involved in that, all of the schools where we have been conducting the dialogues with the kids. We do a lot of dialogues that break down the city and suburban kind of wall. There's like an invisible wall between our city schools and our suburban schools. So we've had the children get together across those divisions throughout the year. We've run clubs, Seeds of Peace clubs in the high schools so that kids can build cross-cultural understanding throughout their high schools. And I think that what we're trying to do on the Duck Race Day is to say, this has been a great endeavor. Let's keep it going.
Great. You mentioned earlier some of the work that you do with seniors. Is there a senior program in Madison County?
There is. It's called the Senior Companion Program. And what it does is it pairs a low-income but healthy senior who wants to stay active in his or her community with a senior who may be frail or homebound and needs a companion. You know, it's not personal care or nursing care, but just somebody to come with the birthday card, with the visit, with the let's take a walk to the library if they're able, or let's go over to the senior center and have lunch together, or, you know, a friend, a companion. And they can have a companion for up to 40 hours a week. Usually people have one or two or three people that they see, these senior companions. And they're paid a small stipend to do that work. And they will go to people's homes or to a senior center and provide some extra supports and extra assistance. The great thing about this program is there's no charge.
That's great.
Nobody has to pay for the companion to be with them. And the other thing this program does is if any of your listeners are caregivers and just need a little respite, we can have a senior companion come so that you can just go out and do your grocery shopping or take a walk or, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's respite service as well.
It's a very unrecognized part of giving care, mm-hmm. is sometimes the respite that those who are caregivers do need.
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to get involved with the Elder Care Service, with your Senior Companion Program, how would they go about starting?
They can just call our office. Can I just say our phone number?
Please.
It's 315-449-3552 and ask to speak to the Senior Services Department, and we'll just start working with you.
And we'll make sure to put that phone number on our Facebook page so folks can find that as well.
That's great.
Let me ask you this. What about the future for Interfaith Works? What are some of the things you'd like to see your organization expand to be able to do?
Well, we want to expand the numbers of people that we serve. Right now, the agency is serving about 10,000 people with our programs and our services, which is pretty significant because we're a small agency, but we reach that many people. We'd like to reach even more, and particularly as our population ages, we want to reach more of our elders. We have just discovered through our studying this problem that over the last couple of years, that 60% of the people in our area's nursing homes don't have a visitor from the outside.
Wow.
They are only seen by people who are paid to take care of them. And there are a lot of compassionate people taking care of them, but they're often overworked and understaffed. So that means that people have nobody that's coming in from the outside with that extra, you know, birthday balloon or a card on Mother's Day or a flower for Easter. 60%. So we're pairing up individuals who are willing to give 1 hour a week in a nursing home to have a new friend, a new grandma, a new auntie, and somebody that they can visit regularly and that person can look forward to having come from the outside. And we know that when people have outside visitors, the nursing staff pays a little more attention to them. And so that's one of the things that we want to grow in this. We also want to grow in our ability to serve refugees and immigrants who have been here for a while and need extra services to really thrive in our community. We have some mental health services, like if there are women who have domestic violence issues or they've been refugees, they've come maybe through the traumas that women often suffer in war. We do have a small support group for those women who meet regularly and can heal the wounds of those wars or those experiences. We'd like to do more work in that area and to be even better at helping people with those deeper needs, that not just the surface needs of getting here and getting started with your life, but healing the things that had happened in the past. So we're working on some of those things. We are expanding in our dialogue work exponentially. So we're doing interfaith understanding. We are doing dialogue work on ending racism, but also we're doing workplace diversity training now. We're helping our whole community become more multicultural. You know, one of the things that we've seen is that our Central New York area does a very bad job in terms of poverty. And so we want to be a part of uplifting this community and helping the community become more what it could become.
Now, if there's somebody listening today and they want to be able to help, maybe they don't have time to volunteer, but they want to make a donation to Interfaith Works, how can they go about doing that?
They can go to our website, which is www.interfaithworkscny.org, and there's a donate button right on there. They can just send us a check at 1010 James Street in Syracuse, 13202. And they can also just give us a call, and we'll come out and see them, and we'll bring a bushel basket, and they can just fill it up with dollars. That would be really helpful.
So, Beth, as we end our conversation here this morning, let me ask you this final question. What do you think most people can do to learn to be more open-minded?
Have a conversation that's hard. Reach towards somebody that's different from you. Kind of walk towards your biases rather than away from the people that represent that. And make it your business to get to know people from all different walks of life. And your whole life becomes enriched and becomes bigger.
Very good. Beth, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, James.
And happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.